Good morning again, and thank you for being with us this Sunday. You know, one of the things that I enjoyed most when I was a student in college was being a psychology student. We oftentimes got to read about case studies or experiments that were done. Well, there was a lot of psychology that I either find not so interesting or sometimes even questionable. I loved reading about the experiments. And I liked this one particular experiment that I encountered many, many years ago. And what it was is they took a group of individuals, not just individuals, people that you would kind of expect to do the right thing, seminary students. And they took these seminary students and did an experiment with them. What they did is they told these seminary students that they needed to go to a particular room on the campus of the seminary and deliver a sermon. Simple task. But what they didn't tell them was that the sermon itself had nothing to do with the experiment. Instead, what really mattered was everything that happened before the sermon. You see, they sent them to a room to do the sermon. But what happened was, when the seminary students got to that room, written on the blackboard was a notification that they'd changed rooms and times that they needed to give the sermon. And that the time was now 10 minutes earlier, and the room was on the far, far opposite side of the campus. This was intentionally designed to make the seminary students anxious, worried, and fearful, and then they'd have to rush across campus and give the sermon in another room. But of course, the sermon still wasn't the purpose. The purpose was to determine how the seminary students behaved between the first room and the second room. You see, what they had done is they'd placed an individual in the grass, just laying there in the grass, whose job it was to lay there and appear to be helpless in the grass to see what the seminary students would do. The first time they ran this experiment, every single seminary student walked past the person laying in the grass. And so they thought to themselves, I wonder, when we interview them, what they thought of the person laying in the grass. Almost every single seminary student indicated that they hadn't seen a person lying in the grass. They were so consumed with their worries, their fears, their anxieties, going over the sermon in their head, being late, having to run across campus, they simply didn't notice the person. So the next time they ran the experiment, they said to the person laying in the grass, make yourself more obvious. Moan a little, roll around, and appear to be in distress. So they ran the experiment with a new group of seminary students. Also, none of whom noticed the individual. So the next time they said, you know, we're going to need to do this better. So they put another person in the grass and said to this person, now, cry. Lay in the grass and weep loudly. Once again, none but a single seminary student stopped to check on that person. And the one who did stop only stopped long enough to say, hey, are you okay? And then went on their way. And the reason that they discovered that each and every one of these seminary students did not stop for the person in distress was, one, almost none of them noticed the person, because they were all consumed with the things they were worried about. And the few who did notice the individual simply felt like it wasn't a priority to deal with that person's problems when they felt like they already had so many problems of their own. Now, you want to know what the irony is. And this is my favorite part of the whole experiment. The sermon that they had been tasked to give was on the story of the Good Samaritan, today's text. People who had spent the last week writing a sermon about the Samaritan who cares for the injured person alongside the road either did not notice or did not make time for an injured person laying next to the sidewalk. That's humans for you. No matter how much we try to move forward, backward is always easier. Now, when we read the story of the Good Samaritan, of course, nowadays, Good Samaritan kind of rolls off our tongue very easily. In fact, it's almost as though that's one phrase, Good Samaritan. In fact, there's a club out there called the Good Samaritans. When Jesus told the story, this was, of course, a very unexpected outcome, because Jewish people considered all Samaritans bad. So the fact that the Samaritan was good was shocking. But reading it as we do now from the 21st century, with the expectation that the Pharisees and the scribes and the priests were oftentimes the bad guys in the gospel lesson, we're not as surprised as we should be that the priest and the Pharisee walk by the person on the other side. But really, if you read the story, I don't know that Jesus' hearers at the time would have been surprised either, but for different reasons. You see, we look at the holy people walking past the injured man, and we think, well, I'm sure they were worried about being set upon by bandits themselves. I'm sure they were worried that this was maybe a decoy and a trap. Or we might just simply assume that they were awful human beings, people who didn't want to help their fellow person because it was just too much work, too much trouble, too much hassle. And while Jesus' listeners at the time might have had those assumptions in the back of their mind, there's a third assumption that they would have held to that would have been considered by them far more important. And that is that the people who walked by, the Pharisee, the priest, would not have stopped to help this individual because he appeared to be dead. And everybody hearing Jesus' words at the time would have known that it is against the law for a holy person to touch a dead body. That if the priest had touched the dead body, or the Pharisee had touched the dead body, they would have been ritually unclean, and therefore no longer fit to do their jobs for an extended period of time. That the body that they saw lying next to the road wasn't just a person who was suffering, wasn't just a danger to themselves, but was itself unlawful for them to touch. So they walked on the other side of the road. So this throws the entire Good Samaritan story in an entirely different way. Because now these aren't just people who are awful human beings. These are people following traditions and customs, biblical law, that they themselves are attempting to do out of a sense of holiness. Now, touching the dead body would not have made them ritually unclean for the rest of their lives. It would have just required for them to go to the church and to do a certain kind of ritual and to suffer from a certain kind of ostracization for a brief period of time. It basically was the equivalent of them not being able to do their religious tasks for an extended period of time and having to expend some money and some effort and some inconvenience to have made this happen. But they might have made the rationalization, I did not help that person for holy reasons. And you know, sometimes as Christians, we do a little bit of the same thing. That there are people that we could help, people that we could interact with, people that we could help lift up to a different place in life, that we don't for fear of, well, getting our hands dirty, for fear of engaging with people who we don't want to engage with, for fear of touching the untouchable. We live in a world full of people who need to hear the gospel message. We live in a world full of people who need to express their feelings about God and to God. We live in a world full of people who need to hear us express our feelings about and to God. But all too often, we don't do that. We don't do that for pretty much the same reason that those seminary students didn't stop and help that person in the grass. We're too busy with our own things, too consumed by our own concerns, too involved in our own worries and our own fears and our own problems to do the hard work of the kingdom of God that is going to get our hands dirty. Might even make us less acceptable in social settings might make us, in fact, outcasts. We don't want to be outcasts. We don't want to be ritually unclean in the eyes of society. We want to keep our lives in our nice, comfortable tracks and not be thrown off our path by the needs of somebody, even if that somebody looks like they're dying. And let me tell you what, there's a lot of very needy people in the world that we live in. I have a lot of friends who do foreign missions, and whether they're going to India or El Salvador or even to the Baltic states, because I have a friend who goes to Estonia, they're out there and they're getting their hands dirty and doing this ministry among people who oftentimes are more than slightly hostile to the ministry they're doing, or in situations where they are in danger. And my friends who do ministry in El Salvador help build houses. Well, I don't know if you know this, but it's not that uncommon for Westerners to get kidnapped in El Salvador and held for ransom because, well, we have a lot of money. Well, that's kind of a dangerous thing. And I'm not saying that you and I need to start taking on foreign missions, although I think that would be a marvelous thing to do. Oh, no, we live in a country full of people who need our help. We live in a country full of people who are emotionally and spiritually laying in the mud, moaning and weeping and crying. People that we tend to walk right past because we're afraid of being off our path, afraid of being out of our comfort zone. But of course, when Jesus is here on earth, his whole ministry is about him being out of his comfort zone. He is the Son. He is God incarnate. He came down from heaven. Do you think that coming from heaven to earth was somehow a step up comfort-wise? No! It was an enormous downgrade. He was in heaven, and he came to this dirty place to pick us up, to nurse us back to health, to bring us back to life. And now we are a part of his body. Our mission and our ministry remains his mission, his ministry, which means that we need to keep our eyes peeled for bodies alongside the road. And I'm not saying that you have to go out and pick up every hitchhiker. In fact, I'm going to suggest that maybe picking up every hitchhiker is a bad idea. But there are ways that we can make a difference in the world that we're in, ways that we should make a difference in the world that we're in. And yeah, it might be risky. It might actually be dangerous. It's definitely going to be uncomfortable. But the question is, are we willing to love our neighbor as Christ loved us? Remember, that's the most important bit here, is that we're to love. We're to love the Lord our God with all of our heart and soul and mind. And if we love God with all of our heart and soul and mind, then we become conformed to the image of God. So what does God do? What does the image of God look like? The image of God looks like the person of Jesus Christ, reaching out to those who are already fallen. So when we love God with our heart, soul, and mind, and are conformed to the image of God through that love, our action is to love our neighbor the way God loved us first. See, we're not supposed to love our neighbor just any old way. We're supposed to love our neighbor as we have been loved by God. So I say to you all, keep your eyes out. Even if you're running late, even if the thing that you thought you had to do in room A is now in room Z, and you're 5 minutes late, and you're busy, and you're worried, and you're stressed, you may encounter people in your life, probably not literally lying on the ground, although possibly, but you're going to encounter a lot of people spiritually, emotionally, mentally, laying on the ground, moaning, weeping, or just appearing dead. Be Christ for them. Bring them the gospel message in love, in service, and in action.